Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Sub no. Stop. Drop. Shut them down. Open up shop. Oh, no. That's how Rough Riders roll. Stop.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new Inside Lacrosse Podcast. My name is Kyle Devitt. I am the gear and lifestyle editor at Inside Lacrosse, and if you're listening to this, you're listening to the pilot episode of what's going to be known as the Lacrosse Industry Podcast, because I couldn't come up with a more clever name. I wish I could, but I couldn't. We're going to talk to a bunch of people that work in the lacrosse industry and kind of pick their brains on what it's actually like. And I think that's an important part of working in lacrosse that maybe people don't know, is that it takes a lot of hard work, and there are, you know, you have more than one job, always. And my first guest, I would venture to say an old chum, if not friend. Maybe you've heard of him. If you're an MLL fan, I'm sure you have, especially if you're hardcore. Mr. Jerry Raganese, current face-off man for the New York Lizards. And we'll talk about his other jobs in the industry as we go. But Jerry, how's it going, man?
It's going very well. Thanks for having me. I'm going to call you out right now. You said welcome back to the fans, but this is the first show, so you know we're already starting out on a great note.
Well, I like
excited to be here.
It's got to be familial. And listen, it doesn't have its own feed. It's in the podcast like family. So I feel like they've heard me. Maybe they don't like me. It's, you know, I'm trying to bring them in. It's a different thing.
I love it.
Yeah. So, Jerry, tell me a little bit about what you do now in the lacrosse industry, aside from being a player on the Lizards.
Okay. So my day-to-day job is my first business, which is Pro Athletics. We make custom uniforms, apparel, decals, tents, bags, soft goods, etc. We manufacture all that good stuff out in Agoura Hills, California. And then my after hours or weekend gig, or, you know, just when I find some downtime, is the Face Off Academy, where we help train and place high school athletes and youth kids. We train the youth kids all the way up through high school. Then we do our best to get them into the schools that they want to get to. And we also do a lot of college coaches consulting and recruiting and all that good stuff. And then my third job is the MLL.
So tell me a little bit about kind of, and the audience, a little bit about your background in lacrosse, where you went to college, how you got into lacrosse, stuff like that.
So I was a football, hockey, and baseball player pretty much my entire life until I got into my sophomore year of high school, and the spring was coming up. I was really bored with baseball. I just didn't care. Like, we're bringing like my Game Boy, if our listeners even know what that is, but I have my Game Boy on like the bench in baseball. I'd get up, I hit a ball, and then I'd go sit back down, you know, eat sunflower seeds and play video games. So me being bored, one of my buddies, his dad was the town coordinator for the youth lacrosse program. There's Jerry, there's no way we can let you play baseball anymore. You're going to play winter league with my son. We're going to, here's all this stuff, be here and, you know, figure it out. Like, okay, cool. So Sunday mornings we play at the indoor sports pavilion in New Jersey. I showed up with the currently JV program of my school and went out there and had an absolute blast playing. I scored like a goal, like, you know, on a sleepy Sunday morning, because it was all jacked up. And I was like, oh, wow, this game's awesome. And then from there, I just fell in love with it. That my sophomore year, we got a varsity team. I was playing varsity and JV. And I'll never forget, after our first game, I had my first cramp. I was sitting down at my buddy's house. We were playing, like, you know, just, you know, some dumb kid poker, you know, betting like candy or something like that. And I remember, like, my leg, like, just, like, locked up. And I was like, what is this? And like, oh, dude, it's a cramp. And I was like, I never ran so much before in my life, because I played football and hockey. It's just, like, you know, you get breaks in lacrosse. you know, when you're on an unskilled team, you're just running up and down the field the entire time. And I couldn't have been happier to do it. So I was fortunate enough to just be in really, really good shape all 3 years I played in high school. And I had some contact with the coach, Gene Caluso, at Rochester Institute of Technology. He said, listen, we can't take you, but we'd love to have you as a walk-on spot and see what you can do. I came in as a freshman, pretty much convinced that I was going to be playing up against a bunch of college football players who just gave up the sport to play lacrosse. And I came in like almost overly in shape, got through all the lifting tests. I had to do the run test again. I was a little bit heavy, but got through the run test. And then from there, I made the team. And they didn't know what to do with me because I didn't really have any lacrosse skills. I just happened to be an in-shape guy. They're like, all right, well, go sit over with the face-off guys. And I had no idea what I was doing. I don't think I want to face off my whole first year of being in practice. I got minimal time on the field, but it was great. Had a blast. And from there, I started to hone my craft. Before Alex Smith really got a ton of press, I was going moto grip because it made sense because you were pushing, and I was good at bench press. So after all that came out, you saw a bunch of guys going moto grip, and by junior year, I had actually gotten kind of okay at facing off, but I had an All-American in front of me, so we would take reps all day, and so by the time he graduated, it was my opportunity to start, and 3 games into the season, I broke my shoulder, and I was like 75% before doing that, so I called my dad. I was like, Dad, I'm going to have to redshirt. Do you think we can do it? He's like, I don't think so. We're going to need you down at the shop. And he's like, that's a shame that you waited so long to play and, now you're hurt. He's like, well, we just can't get you back there. So I'm just like, okay, I guess that's what it is. And he's like, are you kidding? You're going back to college. You're doing a fifth year. He's like, we're going to figure it out. So he was able to, we were able to keep me at school. I still had enough credits to get through to do a fifth year, and after my fifth year of having a pretty successful season, I decided that I was going to stay up at school and try and walk on to the Rochester Rattlers. I went undrafted. I put my name in there, and I was like, well, I think I can do this, having played against some of these NLL or former MLL guys in like summer ball and stuff like that. And I was fortunate enough to make it through the Rattlers walk-on tryouts. Then I got through camp. And I was active, but like Anthony Kelly was the guy. Just the strangest turn of events, what Anthony Kelly's bad luck turned into my good luck. His flight got canceled, as most of his flights normally do, still to this day. And I was eating a Chipotle burrito. And BJ O'Hara comes up to me, he goes, Jerry. I go, yeah, coach. He goes, you're starting today. I go, what? I come like 3/4 the way through a burrito. He's like, just go get your stuff. I'm like, all right, cool. So I go to the trash can, throw up my entire burrito, and then I wound up starting against Jeff Snyder in 2011, back when they were the Hamilton Nationals. and I guess the rest is history from there.
I want to tell you a funny story. I don't think I've told you this before. The year that you were going to get drafted. So a little backstory, I guess. Jerry and I know each other from a very famous internet presence in the lacrosse world. It's called the Lacrosse Forums. I believe you were you? You weren't Flogo back then, were you? What was your name?
No, I was RIT30. I forget the actual name. It was RIT Face Off 37 or something like that.
Yes, that's what it was. And we were mods. So yes. We kind of like policed the boards and we started talking a little bit. And I remember, I think when you got hurt, I was like, in a coaching job, and I was like, dude, I don't even have any cleats. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I need to get some. And you sent me a package of like the first Under Armour cleats that came out that like were breaking everyone's feet back in the day. And I was like, oh, these are so cool. And I gave them to one of my kids. He's like, yeah, I can't wear these. And I was like, oh,
it's like wearing a cement boot.
Yeah. It was tough. They've come a long way. Very excellent product now. But in that draft, I was at that draft and I was talking to Brian Reese, who was with the Outlaws at the time. And I was like, hey, don't you need a FOGO? I think you should draft this D3 guy I know, his name is Jerry Raggedy, he's at RIT, and I gave him the stats, and he goes, nah, I'm going to go with Con Bro Chill in all caps. So I tried to get you drafted, but he took Connor Martin instead, just so you know.
At the time, we both had very good hair, so, I mean, it was probably a lateral move at best.
Phenomenal for both of you. Let me ask you. So you, if I recall correctly, you studied like graphic design at RIT?
No, actually advertising photography.
Oh, okay. All right. So how did you study that and get into the job at Pro Athletics?
Very big pipe dream story. I was a photographer at RIT and I just flat out hated it. They took the fun out of it. Everything was, you know, very structured, and I guess with any, you know, artistic look, when you try and structure it in a corporate setting, it becomes a lot less interesting. So I put up with it for the first, I was like, oh yeah, it's a job, I'll just, you know, I'll figure it out, once I'm out, I'll love it, or something like that. And I wound up doing an internship with a very famous HBO photographer in New York City, his name's Monty Isom. He does, like, all the boxing photography. His, like, they wrapped a skyscraper in Shanghai during the Olympics with one of his photos, and he's the absolute man. He's just an absolute savage. The guy's awesome. But I remember working for him, and I'm like just retouching old, like, NFL photos, and I just was sitting there. I was like, I hate this. There's no way I can do this. I need to get out of this. And that was in like a great scenario with like an awesome boss, and, you know, it was in New York City, and he would take us out, and he was just super cool. I was like, all right, well, if this is best case scenario, I got to get away from this. And then every summer, my sophomore year, we went to, my RIT team went to War at the Shore down in Seagirt, New Jersey, which was a summer, you know, just a summer pickup, or not pickup, I should say, summer tournament where guys, you know, you pay your money, you go in as a team, you play ball. So we're like, all right, cool, we're going to play at the Seagirt tournament, play some summer lax. We go there, we're wearing all our RIT stuff, RIT pennies, like we are the RIT lacrosse team. Nobody else is wearing that. We're getting shirt big time. Like, guys are all wearing wacky stuff, like Team Facebook and Team MySpace, Bud Light, and all these other programs. We're like, what is this? Like, this is ridiculous. So we just keep getting shirt the whole time. It's, you know, it's not a big deal, but it's like, oh, they're like, oh, you know, where's your coach? And, you know, whatever. So, like, all right, next year, there's no way we're going to run into this problem. So I'm like, all right, guys, don't worry, I'll take care of this. I'll get us some uniforms. And you know, just being a dumb kid, I spent all my money out of pocket on helmets and, like, gloves and shorts and pennies for the team. And that team was called the Wu-Tang Killer Bees.
Yes. I remember this team. I had some swag. I got some leftovers.
And the reason why you got those leftovers is because guys are, you know, with any summer program, even to this day, guys say they're going to come. They don't show up. They don't pay for stuff. And so I was left with, like, $3,000 worth of extra helmets, shorts, and whatever. Like, my dad had given me a loan. He's like, all right, Jerry, like, time to pay me back, or you're coming here, you know, you're getting a job and paying me. I'm like, okay, let me figure out how to do this. So, being a moderator of the lacrosse forums, I threw everything up on the for sale section, and, like, sold out in, like, 2 days. And then I was just getting blown up nonstop. And people like, hey, can we get you more of this? You have more of this? And like, all right, I'm out. But then, like, I wound up getting like 32 people that wanted more stuff. I'm like, all right, well, I can do another run. So I was getting my stuff from this guy, Chris, out in California. And he's like, okay, like, you know, we can do another order. I got this new stuff. Why don't you try this? I'm like, okay, great. And he was just like, he was a small retailer out in California, you know, just like any lacrosse unlimited or whatever store that you have. He was doing that. So we do a couple runs after all the hype is building up. Everyone's like, oh, Wu-Tang shorts, these are awesome. You know, let's get more. Then the next year, it just keeps going. And then I do a couple other different ones with different colorways. I think I did like an MF Doom short and, you know, sold like 10 of them or something like that. And it was my senior year, and Chris calls me. He goes, hey, man, I have this new process I want to try. It's called sublimation. We can do these crazy, like, honeycomb inserts on the shorts. I'm like, cool, we'll buy these. These shorts come in, they are awesome. Like, sublimated on the sides, screen printed on the front, heavier than a tank. They're made out of dazzle. Like, they were just super, super heavy, like, but comfortable enough. But, like, if they got wet, they would just fall off because they were just super heavy shorts. So those go super fast. And at this point, I have a small, like, cult following online. They're just like, oh, my gosh. So I have an extra box for everybody, and I'm selling them, and it's going all well and good. And then Chris contacts me and goes, listen, man, like, I'm going to close down my store, and I'm going to start this new company. And he's like, do you want a position? I'm like, yeah, like, I'm definitely in. Like, how do we do this? So we partner up. So there's three guys originally, and we just start selling shorts, the shorts and pennies. And we were getting some stuff from this company, SFC in Vegas, who's no longer even in business. They had a big scandal. So we started going through them. They were like, all right, this stuff isn't that good. So we went over to China before the Chinese sublimation boom. And we actually went there, met a guy. And he's like, listen, I'll be your sole supplier. You guys help me get big. And, you know, I'll get printers and all this other stuff. So we're like, okay, cool. Like, this is great, great partnership for, like, 7 years. Like, I mean, fast forward, obviously, 7 years. And he was doing great work. Last year, we're like, all right, well, this partnership's been great. He built himself all up nice and big. We're like, all right, you know, we're going to take our machines and we are going to start a USA production. So we're like, okay, great. Like, let's figure this out. We bought all our printers. We got top of the line laser equipment. We have this massive heat press we call Bernice, and now we're a full year into making everything stateside. And that's, I guess, that's a roundabout way of saying how I got into Pro Athletics.
We're going to go back to Jerry real quick. But, Jerry, let me ask you a question. We're going to talk about our friends at ZipRecruiter here. Do you hire? Are you in charge of hiring anyone at Pro Athletics?
I do some hiring, yes, sir.
Well, let me ask you this. What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, and less time-consuming? Even when you're busy, you could still be smart about the way you hire. Does that sound good to you?
That'd make my day.
Well, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then, ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. I know that's not how you got the job at Pro Athletics, but we got to give some love to our sponsor. So that kind of came about in a roundabout way. Tell me about how you got involved with the Face Off Academy.
So as any company, when it first starts out, especially when you're in the original ownership, you will make no money. So at the time, I was just given like lessons on the side after putting in a full day's work. I was working for some other guy from Boston who's just kind of, you know, a charlatan and not really teaching kids and teaching kids cheating. And meanwhile, I'm in the league and I'm just sitting here. I'm like, this isn't what anybody does. Nobody cheats like this. This isn't the right way of doing things. You know, you wouldn't teach your kid to cheat on a test in school. Why is it okay to tell them to cheat on the field? And at the time, the position was looked at as just, you know, the 40 thieves. It's just who is the best at cheating. And in a lot of ways, very few guys were like that. So me and Chris Mattis were working for this one guy, and we got put in a really, really bad situation at one of the events, and we just threw our hands up. We're like, all right, we can't do this anymore. We're going to go start our own thing. So we sat down at a Chipotle in Westfield, New Jersey, and we kind of started scheming. We're like, all right, well, you know, let's figure out our own thing. We can start running some clinics and teach these people the right way to do stuff. We're probably going to need somebody else to join us. So we're like, who else can we reach out to? At the time, Greg Grenley was one of my, you know, was a close friend, but he absolutely hated coaching lacrosse. He was a strength trainer. You know, wanted nothing to do with coaching. He would do it every now and again, but he's just like, listen, these people are just, they're bloodthirsty. They don't care what I have to say. You know, they think because they're paying me money, they can, they, you know, I owe them stuff thereafter. you know, he was just totally turned off to the whole thing, and rightfully so. That's how people were back then. They just didn't care. There was no boundaries. They'd call you at like 11 o'clock at night. He's like, no, I have no desire to do that. I have a great. Greg had another business at the time, Brawl of Strength, where he was doing just fine at living in New York City. You know, he was a very sought after personal trainer. So we're like, all right, well, let's see if we can get him. You know, get Greg on board with us. And we finally talked him into it. Like, dude, like, we're gonna try a few things. You know, it's not gonna go great. You know, the first couple tries, but we're gonna put our nose to the grindstone on this, and we're gonna make something out of this, because it's a space that didn't have any, had pretty much nobody taking care of it. It's just like, it was, you know, the guys who were super old saying like, okay, well, rock, paper, scissors beats this, and we had known forever that's not how it was. So we knew that, you know, wherever we go, we're gonna at least teach the kids correctly. And that was the whole point. It was like, hey, I'm tired of people coming to us saying, oh, you guys are good cheaters, teach us how to cheat. And that was normally the first 15 minutes of our event, was explaining why we're not going to teach cheating. So we went down to me, Chris and Greg went down to Delray, Florida. It was like a bazillion degrees. At the time, we were doing like 2 3-hour-hour clinics, one 3-hour-hour clinic for the youth, one 3-hour-hour clinic for the high school kids. And we flew into Delray at like 8 in the morning. And as soon as we got done coaching, we jumped on a plane back home, because like everybody had jobs. So it's like, all right, we got to get back to work, you know, the next day. And we wound up having like, I think like 30 kids for the first event, 30 kids for the second event. I remember nobody had a voice, and we tried jumping into like a local pool because we were so sweat through, but we didn't get a hotel room because we're getting back on a plane. So, I mean, from there, we just kept doing that over and over and over again. This really is, you know, killing ourselves at every single event. And, you know, word got out, and, you know, being that we were MLL players, kids knew who we were, and we were accessible. And this is kind of when social media was just kind of take hold in the league. So kids were pumped to come see us. And I think people just saw how passionate we were about it. We weren't, you know, I think a lot of people hear about the MLL training of old, was when like some big name guy would come in to shoot on a goalie for 20 minutes, collect a big check, and then leave. And everybody would be like, well, what was that? So we kind of broke that. Whatever you want to call it, that
cycle
that people thought about MLL guys. They were just like, oh, MLL guys will come in, they'll shoot for 10 minutes, and they just want to get paid, leave. We were actually making almost no money and killing ourselves coaching these kids. Like, you know, we have a fourth grader who just is looking at you like you got six heads, and you're like, all right, dude, can you put your right knee down? Your right knee down. No, your other knee. Your other knee. Dude, let me grab your knee and put it on the ground for you. Like, people weren't doing that. Like, we're pro guys, established pro guys. So people were like, oh my gosh, like my son is getting training from a professional player. This is so exciting. And the kids were excited, even though some of the young ones didn't really care that much. But from there, we sharpened the knife. We figured out what the best, we came up with our own training system. We figured out how to optimize stances, and, you know, a lot of late nights figuring out what the best way to go about doing things is. And our whole thing was no cheating, no cheating, no cheating, no cheating, no cheating, no cheating. That's the first thing. Just, guys, if you're going to try and use your hands, we will hand you back your money and you're free to go home. That's what we say. We say, if we see you use your hands, you're getting out of here. Have a nice day. So the kids knew from get-go how serious we were. And that was back in 2012. So we're in 2017 now. I mean, hundreds of clinics later, thousands of kids. I mean, our guys are all through the college system. It's harder now to find a school that doesn't have one of our guys there. And those schools that don't have one of our guys, they have one of our coaches on staff.
Do you?
That's long and short of it.
Yeah. Do you see the Face Off Academy as like your greatest professional achievement?
Yes and no. I take a lot of pride in having a stateside manufacturing plant. That's something that, you know, across all business, like across all aspects of business, is something that's very rare. A lot of people, you know, the big thing in America right now is outsourcing. We brought production back, so I'm really, really proud of that. But I think, at least in the sport of lacrosse, not just for face-offs, but I think just for how MLL players are able to stay in the league longer. I think we came up with a really good blueprint that we share openly with just about anybody in the league. So, hey guys, you can make money doing this. You don't have to slave away all week, stay extra hours just so you can make your flight to get to practice on Friday. That's what the league was back when we got in there. It was, the 9-to-5ers who were lawyers and, probably like 80%, 80% non-industry guys were in the league. So, guys were weekend warriors. Now I think probably 80% of guys are in the industry or work for themselves in some capacity. Only 20% of guys are working outside of lacrosse. I think a lot of that is just based on, we showed them how to start their own shooting clinics, how to start your own business in lacrosse and do it the right way. And younger guys saw, hey, if I just bust my ass, I'll be able to make something of myself. Back when in 2010 and 11, people were like, what are you nuts? Like you're going to start a lacrosse business. You're going to go against Warrior. You're going to go in this guy. It was for us. We went into a space that had nobody in it. Like, is anybody that was doing anything was just teaching like random cheat moves and, these weird guys. We're like, no, we're professional players. We played the game in the past 5 years. We're going to teach you what people are doing now instead of, the old school dinosaur stuff. So, I'm very proud of both my businesses. I think the Face Off Academy gives me a little bit more joy because I've worked with kids who were long stick middies just 2 years ago, and now they are playing they got picked up. They were an average, average long stick middie. Then they became one of the most highly touted Face Off athletes in the country in a matter of, 24 months of working with me. And they say, Coach, like, thank you so much. I got into the school of my dreams because of how you helped me. And I'm thinking, well, dude, I've been just working with you. You're the guy that did all the hard work. But, somebody comes up to me and says, thank you. It really, there's very few jobs out there where, you get to change somebody's life and, be on a journey with them. Most people are just, they're buying and selling and just, they say thank you as just commonplace. When someone says thank you to me, or anybody, anybody comes up to me, a parent, thank you. He wasn't sure. You give him a lot of confidence, and now he wants to go play at these big time Division I schools, and he's gonna, he's really hunkering down on his grades, and that was something he was having trouble with. Like, that's something that resonates with me. People come up to me and go, oh, that was life changing for my son. And I'm just like, I'm just having fun coaching your kid. He's a great kid. Thank you for letting me work with him. So I think that's where the Face Off Academy, after a long day of working at Pro Athletics and UPS losing a box and I got to figure that out and you just have a tough day at your regular job, then I get excited to go work with these kids because they're pumped to see me. So I think it's more fulfilling on the Face Off Academy side, but I'm very, very proud of not just my companies, the people that work in them.
Right. And I think what you're hitting on is kind of the point of this podcast, right? That it's not necessarily one job or one idea. It's a desire to keep grinding and doing what you believe in, but like not stopping. We kind of talked about this before we started the podcast. I think the perception of, and you offered this up, of lacrosse is that because lacrosse has a lot of affluence around it, that if you work in it, you are from an affluent background or are yourself affluent. And it's just not true. And
No, not at all. I think the first 3 years out of college, I was making well below the poverty line. It was passion over, I guess product. I mean, I knew a lot of guys that got a job in Wall Street and did the schlep to, the bus drive to, New York City every day to work at some hedge fund or finance company. And I was like, I'd rather make $0 and at least feel like I'm building something than do that every day because you have no quality of life. You're sitting on a bus, the guy next to you farts. Like the horror stories I heard like from my friends, I was like, you couldn't pay me. There's not enough money in the world to do that. And especially in lacrosse, it was always a labor of love, and it still is for me, even though it's just, it's bigger, so there's more problems. But every day I get up and, if I'm having a bad day, I go, it could be really way, way worse. I could be sitting in a cubicle, a project could go wrong, and like you know, I can just get chewed out. The only person that chews me out is a customer if something goes wrong, and then at least I can fix it. If a problem happens at a big office, you just get chewed out. There's nothing you can do. So, I mean, for me, it's always been a labor of love, but absolutely, I mean, every single guy that plays in the MLL, for the most part, is a coach, has another job, coaches on the side. Most guys are 3 to 4 hat wearers, for sure.
So, that being said, give me one thing you love and one thing you hate about all of your jobs.
I am a slave to the grind. I get up at 4:45, 5 a.m. every day. Go to the gym because that's the only time throughout the day that I am not getting phone calls. Even right now, I have my phone on silent. I've already missed 3 phone calls and have 17 missed texts. These are all customers looking for things, asking for things, what have you. So it's just a constant battle. You know, which is good. I'd rather be too busy, as they say. You'd rather have too much business than not enough business. So it's just, I find that it's just in my mentality. If I'm not working, I feel like I should be working. And apparently that eventually drives some people crazy, but so far I'm able to hang on. So I think the biggest thing I hate is that I'm a slave to my job. Like I'm very fortunate that I get to go to Hawaii every year and play in the Awesome Women Tournament and raise a bunch of money out there. The whole time I'm actually out there with clients, you know, talking with them about their new artwork. I'm doing artwork with them. Oh, actually on the field, I've done that. I did that the first year. I had my computer with me because a lot of those guys are my clients who are getting ready to order. So even though I do get to travel a lot, which is awesome, I like that a lot, but it never stops. If I fall asleep, I know I'm waking up to a bunch of different, you know, phone calls and texts. And my customer Jeff Snyder loves to call me at 4:30 in the morning, you know, just to pick my brain on next year's artwork. So it's just never stopping.
What other job do you think you'd have if lacrosse never happened?
So my family has a paper recycling business since 1895. I think that's when like they made people like put stuff up on the trucks. But yeah, we have a 100-year-old paper shredding business, and I think I would have gotten into the family trade. Actually, it's funny, I wouldn't have gone to college if it wasn't for lacrosse. I was set up to, you know, fall into the family business. I didn't want to go to college. I didn't see the point in it from an education standpoint. I was like, well, if I know what I'm going to do. I may as well just not go to college. And the only way for me to continue playing lacrosse, which was like my favorite thing to do, was to go to college. So that's actually why I started applying.
What you mentioned, you're busy basically all hours of the day. What do you like to do outside of work that like calms you down besides like, you know, going to the gym, stuff like that?
I think everybody kind of knows my shtick. Most evenings I'll take an hour and a half out of my time to make a nice big dinner. And from that, you know, if your hands are covered in something, you can't answer your phone. And that was kind of like how my love for cooking started. Was like, I'd be rolling meatballs at home, helping my mom or something like that. And I couldn't answer my phone. I was like, well, I've got to go to voicemail. I was like, okay, well, when calls go to voicemail, the world doesn't end. You know, I was a guy like, no call can ever go to voicemail. No call can ever go to voicemail. And once I figured that out, I was like, okay, some calls can go to voicemail. I think I'll just sit down and finish what I'm making for dinner. I'll eat it, then I'll call that person back. And then, so I would get a calming effect when I would start cooking dinner or lunch or whatever I was making that day. And now I kind of, not every day out of the week, but I do try to make 2 big time consuming meals that I plan, out a few days in advance. And that's where I put my phone in the corner or I don't answer phone calls or emails, you know, and I just make a big meal, eat, and then I get back to work. And I think that's one of my favorite things to do. That's not lacrosse related. I really enjoy coaching. Like, I love to coach my guys because they're fun, they're young, they all have great personalities, and for the most part, I think they're all happy to see me. So I like to see them as well. So outside of lacrosse, cooking is probably my number one favorite thing to do.
Well, that fits perfectly with our second sponsor here on the Lacrosse Industry Podcast, and that's Blue Apron. I'm sure you've heard of it. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone that maybe isn't Jerry Reganese, who is an excellent chef. Or so I heard. I haven't been invited to one of these dinners, but I hope that eventually it'll happen.
Come on down.
It's my hope. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. As a result, seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. Produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they're reducing food waste. Cooking together builds strong family bonds in households, and research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. Those who spend a lot at restaurants or high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Their featured upcoming meals include cheesy chicken and black enchiladas with salsa verde. I'm a sucker for an enchilada. Shrimp marinara with spaghetti, spinach, and parsley. And maple gravy smothered pork chops and stewed collard greens and sweet potatoes. Sounds like something you would whip up in your kitchen there, Jerry. But
I'm into all that.
Yeah, it sounds great. Check out this week's menu and get 30% off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook if you're not Jerry Reganese. So we're just going to kind of close it out of here. You know, we've talked about kind of what you would do if there was no lacrosse, what you're doing right now. What is your dream job? Like, when you were growing up as a kid, what did you want to do?
You know what? I was more of a screw up and a screw around than thinking about what I was going to do when I needed to go to work. I was more excited just to, I think I wanted to be like a professional BMX rider, but I was scared of heights. So I was more preoccupied with, like, you know, trying to get my nerves down to jump off like a half pipe or something like that growing up. And then I think I just kind of fell into this. So I guess that's an open-ended question.
All right. So the other point of this podcast is to kind of, you know, show people that there are other jobs other than coaching and other than playing, albeit those are two of your jobs, but the third one is kind of your main job. What advice would you give to people looking to break into the lacrosse industry that are like just graduating or about to graduate? They love lacrosse. They're not going to be players. They're not going to be coaches. What would you kind of, where would you point them towards?
I think across any job market, you are just going to just eat rocks for the first 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of your career. No, there are no get rich quick schemes. The overnight successes you see have had the worst failures. The bottom has fallen out. They racked up credit card bills. Their credit was hit. You know, they ran out of gas and didn't know what to do. Cell phones got turned off. So just know that everything you see that's where somebody is having a ton of success, that came out of the ashes of unbelievable, unexplainable failure. Not just on my personal account, but just any overly successful person or highly successful person you know didn't get there by chance. So just be ready. It's, you know, there's no fairy tales out there. Just be ready to, you know, eat rocks for a while and just outwork your competition. Doesn't matter if it's staying late at work, answering a few more emails or moving more product or calling more people. If you're in sales, that's the only way to get ahead nowadays. So that is my parting words of wisdom is just be ready to work.
You just like killed the hopes of every millennial listening to this podcast. They just turned it off. Work?
The truth will piss you off, but it will. No, sorry. The truth may set you free, but first it's going to piss you off.
Absolutely. And this is a bad idea to end the podcast, but I threw it in here because I thought it'd be funny. Do you have any questions for me? I'll let you be the interviewer for me for the last like couple minutes here.
Yes. How tall are you actually?
I am 5'7" with shoes on.
5'7" with shoes on. So it's like 5'3" with shoes off.
No, okay, I'm not 5'3". I'm like 5'7". 5'6". I'm 5'6".
Okay.
I'm 5'6". Says, listen, have I had 5'9" on a New Hampshire license? Sure. That's happened.
Okay.
Is it a clerical error? I can either confirm nor deny. I'm sorry.
Okay. And yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot. How come you haven't ordered your Stew Funk apparel through me?
The team is dead, unfortunately.
Okay.
I had to join another team. I will and would have, but I actually played for Team Harpoon at Lake Placid this past season.
Okay. Just know that every time you don't order through an American company, you may be funding terrorism.
I understand that, and I will put that in my back pocket going forward. Jerry Raggedies, thank you for coming on the Lacrosse Industry Podcast, publicly shaming me for being a short person, even though you yourself are under 6 feet tall. It's fine.
Very true.
It's great. It's allowed from you. It's not allowed from people that are over 6 feet tall. You're not allowed. Like, no, not cool. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you guys checking out this podcast, and stay tuned for more podcasts from the Inside the Cross podcast studio this week and all throughout fall going into the 2018 season. Have a nice night.